Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Clinton Yates, who you can catch on The Undefeated, you can catch him on ESPN Radio, you can catch him on Around the Horn, and he even, in his own Twitter bio, describes himself as ridiculously black, which is at least three more levels of black than any of us are able to reach here on the show. We are very happy to welcome Clinton Yates here to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Clinton, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. No worries. That description is mainly because I grew up in D.C., which was then known as Chocolate City in the 80s and 90s, when, the mayor was a human who got caught doing a lot of things with a lot of different people. And, you know, I come from a place where everybody's black, so it ain't nothing special to run up on me if you look like me, because I know a bunch of people like us.
We should have brought you on with a little go-go music, no doubt about it.
But nice call. But can I think quickly, though? I am very excited to talk to Ray. Okay, I just want you all to know that. This is a very big moment in my life, so I'm looking forward to this.
Well, then let me get out of the way. Ray, Clinton, do your thing.
Okay, I want to preface that by saying your life must be crap if this is a big deal in it.
Oh, no. I mean, look, come on. You know,
I know me. I've been with me most of my life, and I've never not been disappointed in it.
Okay, fair, but Ray, listen to this. As somebody that writes my opinion for a living and wanted to do that for a while and finally got to the point where I could do that, you are a person that's been one of the most legendary takedown artists in the history of the game. So this is an honor. That's what I'm saying.
There you go.
Okay, well, we'll give it time. That'll blow over.
But the fastest way to make Ray uncomfortable is by giving him a compliment. So he's
That's
shaking right
it.
Now, Clinton.
let's get to the point of the day. In the last 24 hours, we saw a lot of people reporting a lot of things that ended up sort of to be kind of true, but also not true, including the notion that the Lakers and Clippers were going to walk out. As we look at it now, and it looks like they're going to resume play on Sunday from everything I've seen, was this a lesson that the NBA union is not as unified on all things as we thought they were, and that it took a lot of discussion to come to this? Or was it the reporting of the story that was sort of too fluid to get our hands around? Because, again, last night it looked like we were staring at Armageddon, and today it's like sort of slightly cooler heads have prevailed for the moment.
I think it was a lot of column B, but I'm going to add a third column to that. And column C, I think, was that there was just a large part of human nature of being in that bubble that boiled over to the point that a lot of different things came out, whether or not they were correctly reported or not, whether or not we can sort of ascribe them to the absolute integrity of the union or the Players Association. Look, I don't know, but I know that when I watch guys night in and night out, be it on Zoom, you know, talking about the things that are weighing heavy on them, and I hear stories from people that are in the bubble about, you know, what people are doing to try to get their routines down, and you sort of see guys coming in and out, and you can just, you know, you can read body language, and as well as talking to people who were there, you can tell people are exhausted, you know, in so many different ways. And so when something finally boils over, and, you know, I think that this matters in this situation in terms of the chronology, we saw Doc Rivers break down. And Doc is a guy, Doc was a big-time player in the game. You know, it's not like Doc is just some dude who came out of a video booth, and that's not to knock anybody who does. But what I'm saying is that his experience with the game is long and strong. And so when Doc broke down like that, I think a lot of people were signaled hardcore. Yo, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, why is Doc crying on the screen? How do I feel? you know. And then after that, the next morning, you see some teenager walking around with an assault rifle or whatever y'all call these guns, bucking somebody in the head and then getting water from a police officer. And people say, you know what, I'm done. You know what I'm saying? And I got a lot to say now that I'm thinking about it. I think it was a lot more of that than it was necessarily, oh, we got to be in lockstep with the PA and all this other stuff. Sometimes you just don't have time to think of that. And you want to say what you want to say, and you kind of got to shut it down in order to do so, which is kind of what the column was about. These guys just needed a break, man. It was obvious.
Yeah, I love your column. And I thought that, you know, to your point, if that's all it ever becomes, they deserve it. Let them have it. But I wonder if they called you into that meeting yesterday, the players meeting, and said, look, some of us want to play, some of us don't want to play. All of us want to have the biggest impact we can in this fight. What would your advice be in terms of whether to play or not?
Well, at this point, which is what I advised before, my advice would have been take a short break. I mean, you know, missing 2 days, especially in the context of a pandemic, is not really that big a deal. I mean, let's think about what we're going up against here. It's possible that, let's just say, there was an outbreak and the league had to stop for a week anyway. Like, that was surely within the calculus of everybody's opinion in terms of what might have happened at any given point. They had discussed that as well. And so I sort of looked at it as much more of that. Like, whatever it is you think you need to do, take the time to figure it out, because y'all are clearly not having anything close to fun right now. And that messes up not just, you know, the humanist side of me, but it messes up the basketball. Paul George said himself, I was playing terribly because I felt like crap about a lot of things. I know people got their jokes off, and that's all, I think, within fair reason in terms of what we know or what we knew then. But I don't necessarily know that I need that answer about what happens next. I know that I need those meetings to happen for them for the exact reason you mentioned. They got to figure this out, you know, and whether or not they're doing it on sort of what some people consider our time or their time, that's immaterial to me. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic. These guys have been entertaining us nonstop for the better part of a month here, and it's been fantastic. So if they need to shut it down, or if they need to get some time to get their message together, whatever it may be about, okay, player, you've given us your time. I will take some time to wait and listen at this stage. Absolutely. As I see that as a fan and as a journalist.
I hate to turn this to the team owners, because they are sort of ancillary to the process right now. But eventually, they're going to have to reach out to the players if they want this to remain sort of a rational approach to what is a very irrational world right now. What do you want to see, or what should we want to see from the team owners in order of not just supporting the players with a press release here or there, or saying, yeah, we're okay that you take a few days off. What more should they be doing so that the players will look at them and say, yeah, they actually do have our backs here?
You know, when this question first came up more generally in the context of 2020, when we were first dealing with the Confederate flag situation in NASCAR, and in general, the world was sort of coming to grips with, while we're finally paying attention, we finally understand. And a lot of people would ask the question, what can we do? And I would tell people straight up, just like I'm going to tell y'all, friends, foes, frenemies, colleagues, whatever, yo, talk to your other white friends about what it is that you can do. And y'all do stuff that doesn't necessarily involve us dragging you along or answering a question at every step of the way to approve whatever it is you think you're trying to do better. You know, if you're an owner, sure, supporting the players is absolutely what you want to do. But that doesn't always mean, okay, here I have to singularize your attention in order for you to give me direct things to do. Otherwise, I'm useless. It means, you rich, why don't you go talk to some of your other rich friends and figure out what the hell is going on with these police departments? How about that? You know what I'm saying? You want to get somebody on the phone, why don't you use your connects and avail us of that instead of sort of simply making you available singularly for what you can do? And I think that's what the power of the owners is. It's not about going directly to guys. It's about utilizing wherever it is their position is in society to get other people on their level with that kind of pull and or cash and or both to take this seriously as seriously as they are. That's really what I think it is. You don't got to make more work for the guys that are already struggling to pay, to play, never mind to think about this and take on the responsibility of sharing that feeling with the world.
Well, that's sort of where I was going with this, because when the Bucks players reached out to the Statehouse in Madison, talking to, talking to the lieutenant governor and the attorney general, would it not make as much sense for Wes Lasry to be the guy who says, I'll handle that end? I mean, that is that what we're talking about here? Because I get the sense that everybody's looking at the players and going, well, okay, how are you going to fix this? And it's really not theirs to fix. It's theirs to point out how intolerable this is. And then the people who have the power to walk into the state house and make demands, to make those demands.
I don't disagree with that, but I also don't think that in our analysis of that, we have to be so, it doesn't have to be so binary or zero sum in terms of like the solutions of how we can get to this. If the first step is the players say, hey, this would be somebody we talk to. And then the owner says, okay, how about this? A seed is planted as to how to do this. Other owners see that. Other GMs see that. That's the whole point of doing this all out in the open to begin with, is that you make it clear to everybody else, this is perhaps something that we can do. And so when you have a discussion that is public and is an open, and you get sometimes public opinion, you know, ruling what should be done, which is fair if you're dealing with smart people, well, then you learn. You go along as you figure it out. They call it building the plane while you fly it. That's squarely where the NBA is right now. And I don't have a problem with that, because theoretically, there's nothing really to lose in that regard because of the popularity of the NBA and the specific necessity of the players in the labor force. The players in the NBA are better at basketball than anybody is at any other sport, simply due to the numbers of the people in the league and how good you have to be to stay at the top. They're not going to lose anything by simply saying the players have more power, because they do. You know, and so flexing that in a way that doesn't make it just about one side or just about the other, but working at some level of collaboration, that's the goal here. The goal is to finish, not necessarily just how we get there.
Clinton Yates is with us here today on 95.7 The Game. He wrote a fantastic piece on the undefeated and playing off collective bargaining. You got into the topic of collective bereavement, and that's what we're looking at, a generation of black players going through, and you look at the generation that came before them, many of them now analysts. And I'll tell you, I think some of the most powerful stuff that is happening here, some of the stuff, you know, what is the best chance to resonate with a tone-deaf white America? Relate it to your own children. And there's something powerful in a grown man breaking down. There's something powerful in a grown man's tears. And, you know, to hear what Chris Webber had to say, to hear what Robert Horry had to say, to hear what Dominic Smith of the New York Mets had to say. I mean, I think that this is incredibly powerful stuff. Doc Rivers, his voice quivering the night after the Clippers, you know, won their last game in the bubble. That's powerful. And I think I'm glad that they've decided to play, because it's going to create an opportunity for more of those powerful moments. I believe in the power of silence, but man, when you hear somebody just so stricken by something that there's no faking that. That's not a radio quiver. That's not for effect. Like, you can hear the pain. And the pain, I think, is maybe the first way that people who don't relate to this can relate to it.
That's probably true. And that's one of the things that when people started asking me, well, what does it matter what the NBA does? What is the point of putting Black Lives Matter all over the court or whatever approved message on the back of their jersey? What does that matter if they're not in action? And I'm like, dude, it's not just about what the players do or what's written on the court. It's about what all the broadcasters and the people around the game bring to the common discussion about what it is we're talking about so that people can learn something. You know, not everything has to be some turnkey operation to salvation. Like, not remotely. That's just not even real. And so when these kind of final destination questions are the way we frame things, it makes me anxious, because it makes me think that people think that this is going to be somehow easy, or it like should be. You know, that's not, you can't snap your fingers and get to whatever utopia that people think that black folks or people of color or other underprivileged communities feel. That's not what we're trying to do here. The work is the fun part. That we understand that we're all actually trying to get there and not just trying to brush this off as another thing that we think is simple. So you're exactly right. When you see these people going through it, the people that aren't necessarily the ones that are putting their bodies on the line, but they're just sitting around thinking about it the same way we all are, it has a huge effect. Totally. And so symbolism and things like that, they matter well beyond any protests or legislation or whatever it may be, which is not to say those don't matter. But, you know, yeah, the generalized discussion around these games. Dominic Smith happens to be a friend of mine. I talked to him last night. You know, he's okay now, but he said, yo, man, craziest day ever. flat out. And so, yeah, those moments matter, but it's things like now. You guys want to talk about it. You know, I happen to write about it, but folks are thinking about it. And that's really all I can ask for right now at this stage of the game.
And my thought on that is if the NBA can make this many people talk about it, just based on sheer numbers, the NFL has that much more power. At the same time, I think the NFL has a lot more opposition within its ranks in terms of the players and clearly a lot more opposition at the top. What do you expect this movement to look like in the NFL?
I think this is going to be a lot more tame in terms of the general band of, like, from top to bottom of reactions, because the NFL, unfortunately for them, they did the bad move of taking a hard stance on something based on a variable that they never thought was going to change, and that was the crowds and the fan base. The operating logic of the NFL was, if people start doing this all over the place, it's going to make our crowds crazy and they're not going to show up. Well, they're not showing up anyway now because they can't. So that's kind of out of the window, and now you actually have to address the issue, which is very awkward. The thing is this. There's a very easy answer for the NFL, which is what they should have done to begin with, which is do nothing. Let people do whatever they want, and it'll be fine. That's pretty much how it goes. They've got that option. And so while I don't think that the NFL is anything to be admired for stepping back, or Goodell for apologizing to whomever he chose to apologize to, I don't necessarily think this is something to be commended, but I do think it's instructive, because they can just say, you know, we probably should have just done nothing to begin with, and we would have been fine. That is still very much an option for the NFL. But what I fear is that market to market, each owner is not going to be in line with that. And we've seen this sort of thing with Jerry Jones trying to have his cake and eat it too, and we'll see how other owners deal with it. But overall, no, they can literally just fall back, which half the time is all anybody wants anyway. Let us live, dog.
It's interesting that you brought that up, because Goodell has been the sole voice among football management on the subject. And no other owner, other than putting out tepid statements that, you know, on fancy letterhead that don't really amount to anything, the silence has been deafening. Is it reasonable to assume that the NFL is just going to do what they've done with Colin Kaepernick and just say, silently sit it all out and just wait for events to wear down? Because I don't get the sense that the NFL does any tactic other than being silent when they need to, because eventually people will move on to the next outrage.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to understand, like, I think that the connection between the last two things you said is actually where the most important part of this comes to me, which is being silent is not just because you're waiting around for something to go away. It's because sometimes you're not adding to the discussion by saying anything, you know? People talking about Jerry Jones been silent. I mean, dog, I ain't checking for what Jerry Jones has to say about anything anyway. Like, what? I'm sorry. Did I miss the memo where suddenly Jerry Jones's thoughts on what was going on with Black America and police brutality mattered at all? I barely care what Jerry Jones thinks about his own quarterback situation. Why on earth would I be cared about what he thinks about what's happening in the rest of the country? You know? I mean, and that's kind of where we are here, is that there's kind of an assumed importance of a lot of people just because they hold some position in society, when I think what we've learned mostly, guys, in 2020 is that, you know, maybe it's time to just listen and you don't have to say anything. But not saying anything does not mean that you are completely abdicating yourself from any responsibility or portion of the discussion. It just means you're listening. And quite frankly, that is a difficult thing for folks who are white. They're just not used to that kind of level of interaction with people that look like me and people of color, because that's just not what happened. You know, it's very difficult, and I understand that, especially for guys that are rich and guys that are in power. But sometimes, guys like Jerry Jones, yeah, dog, you ain't got to say nothing. It's fine. You know, we'll be good.
Clinton Yates here on 95.7 The Game. So, as you said, listening is about as important thing that can happen right now. And we had Matt Barnes on with us yesterday. A fantastic conversation with Matt Barnes. And we finished by asking him, you know, what does allyship mean? You know, what do you want your white friends to amplify, concentrate on? What can we do to stand shoulder to shoulder?
You talked on a lot. You touched on a lot of things right there. And by the way, love Matt Barnes, by the way. Shouts to him. He's one of the better guys around the league, even though he gets a weird reputation. I like,
well, I mean, he used to sucker punch dudes in charity games. Like, he was.
I mean, he also once drove 100 miles to beat somebody up in his old house, which, yeah. I respect. But that's a whole other story. But back to your question, though, I mean, I think you touched on a lot of them, but the main thing, and this is what I tried to end the column with because it's the hardest one, I think, for people to really execute based on reflex, is just believe us. You know, if somebody says, hey, this hurts me. Hey, here's what happened to me. Hey, here's what goes on. If the first reaction is, oh, yeah, but, you know, like I'm the special one because I'm your friend, so I can make a joke about it. Or, nah, clearly something happened. Like if your reflex is to doubt, then you're not doing it the right way. Everything doesn't have to be some overarching achievement and crowning celebration in bipartisanship, you know, love. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. It's just that if I tell you something happens, dog, believe me, because ain't nobody got no reason to lie. Black people aren't going around making up racist incidents because they think that it's cool to tell their white friends who don't think that they're racist. That's not a part of anybody's calculus on how to be happy in life. You know, people tell people about things because they want them to know what goes on so we can inform them about how they could possibly treat a lot of people, not because they want to answer the third degree about whether or not that individual person is part of the problem. You know what I'm saying? Believe us. Trust me, it's true. And educate yourselves based on that. Things will get better.
The WNBA has sort of been forgotten in all this, but their players seem to be more in tune with all the issues, in part because there's an owner that they have to deal with all the time that they're basically at war with. And the WNBA, and maybe it's because they don't make as much money or they feel a greater solidarity toward each other because it's a league that sort of has to cling to the strength of its players, has sort of been more strident on if not all, then most of the social justice issues that confront us now. Are they sort of the template by which the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, even college sports, are they the template by which we should be looking for what it means to sort of engage in the struggle?
Okay, let me break this thing down from a fundamental standpoint, to quote a great internet personality, Kent Murphy, the baseball coach. Now, there's a couple things about that. Number one, Ray, I'll push back on the notion that they have been forgotten in all this. Maybe this is because I, A, live in a WNBA market, and B, grew up in one for the WNBA champion Washington Mystics. And so the world of the WNBA's communication is very top of mind at all the time. So there's that. And number two, no, they are not a blueprint or a template. They are the beacon. They've been about this. All right? They are the ones who do it. Everybody else are the ones who are trying to do it. And that is mainly and specifically because of the number of black women in the WNBA. These two things are directly correlated to one another. I could get off on Maya Moore and telling that story about Jonathan Irons and getting him out of prison, which is a fundamentally incredible thing on a lot of levels, or we could simply talk about the different team things that they've done over the years, well before 2020. The WNBA is more than the standard bearer. They're the ones who do it. Everybody else kind of acts like they do. So, sure, if the other leagues think that they can get in line with that, how about you get more black women in your leagues in general, whether or not they be on whatever field or whatever it may be? You know, that's how you do that. It's got to do with the people that are there, not just the so-called plan, because not everybody can execute the same plans the same way, which is kind of a whole problem, you know?
Clinton Yates, this was awesome, man. Since you're a D.C. guy, I got to wrap up with this. Can you believe Daniel Snyder, which just had like another bomb dropped on him, gets to kind of get that just blown right out of the news cycle based on all this?
I mean, I think that the people who are actually most happy about that are the NFL overall, because I don't think that dude's going to own the team in 5 years. I think that last report that came out was much worse than the previous one. And as somebody that's followed and covered that team for the greater part of a decade plus in terms of professionally and obviously growing up there, I think they're going to get that dude out the paint. You know, he's an embarrassment to the league, obviously. Never mind the market, never mind the franchise, and never mind the victims of all that nonsense that went on there. I think that quietly, the NFL might say, you know what, this is fine, because we're still trying to get this dude out of here. And the less talk about it there is, probably the easier it's going to be to do. But let me tell you something, the person who's going to convince him whether or not he's going to do that on his own free will, her name is Tanya. She's his wife.
Oh. What is it going to take for the Warriors to get the Wizards to come off Bradley Beal?
Bruh. That's an excellent question, because I thought that they should have traded Bradley Beal a while ago to sort of rebuild and stop acting like this Wall-Beal thing was going to work out, because I don't know if Wall's ever going to be the same player. I would like to be proven wrong, but at this point, now that they've signed him and he's all in, I'm definitely here to keep Beal. So there is no price, sir. Thank you
very much. Clinton, thanks for talking to us about a whole bunch of important stuff and then a little fun stuff at the end, man. This was great. We really appreciate it.
Ray, I'm going to tell all my white friends that I talked to you. I'm joking. I'll see you guys
later. Ruined my day in about six different ways, and you will not be forgiven.
Goodbye, guys.
Thank you so much to Clinton Yates for stopping on by. A genuine laugh out of Ray. That wasn't even a radio laugh. That's Ray. The man loves you.
Yeah, well, that's not healthy. I'm trying to save him from himself.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.